Hello.
Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt.
Welcome, you guys.
That is Liz.
And that's Jenny.
And we are back to tell you some stories.
We got it all today. We got UFOs. Check. Uh-huh. We got something I'm super excited about. A listener submitted story that has to do with the 411 stuff we talked about before. I'm just slightly excited. Check.
She's just a little bit excited.
Oh, man. That story, I think I've read 20 times. It's such a Liz story. And then we have a listener submitted question, which I'm excited about.
So let's start with this UFO story.
Yeah.
So this was shared with us by Reddit user In Denial Prophet. So he says, whether you choose to believe my encounter, that's up to you. I'm only sharing it because it's impossible to talk to friends or family about it. I have much better things to do than to share fairy tale stories online. I'm just here to share my story without the fear of ridicule. The opinions of online trolls doesn't bother me in the least. My friends and family thinking I've gone crazy does. So here goes. I was out jogging in the middle of the afternoon one day. Beautiful day, no clouds, blue sky, maybe 75 degrees out. As I was jogging, a huge red flash appeared in the sky. It was so bright that it made my eyes flinch. When I looked up, I was looking at something completely unknown to me. I assumed I would know a UFO if I ever saw one. I could literally feel my brain trying to tell my eyes what it was looking at, and just not being able to. I'd say it took about 15 to 20 seconds before I realized a massive beige-colored triangular aircraft was just above the trees, just up in front of me. It was surrounded by three balls of light. Two balls of light were behind the aircraft, and one was out in front, strangely also in a triangular pattern. They were so bright, I couldn't see any shape. They looked as bright as stars. I could see just what appeared to be super shiny metal, but no shape. I'm not convinced it was metal either. It was comparable to staring at the sun. That's how bright the balls of light were. The beige triangle was probably the length of 2 to 3 passenger airliners, completely silent, and it was really thick too, a few stories high. The top of the triangle had what I could best describe as a boiling cloud around the top of it. Similar to boiling water, but a boiling cloud instead of the water, and it was really strange. The bottom of the triangle had three massive lights, two red and one white, and they began rotating in sequence. The red one would come on, get super bright, dim out, and then the next red would come on and did the same thing, followed by the white light. It repeated that sequence the entire time. What had me mesmerized was this wasn't light from light bulbs. This was like starlight or something. I just remember thinking I need to run up directly under it and look at where the light is coming from. There weren't bulbs or anything. The bottom looked like it had open voids where the light was coming out from. It was very strange. Now here's where the story takes a hard left. As I was standing there, I suddenly noticed all sound was gone. I didn't hear any of the traffic or anything. I also noticed that the green grass and blue sky seemed more vibrant. Just a different shade, I guess. I also felt like I was standing 3 feet in the air, even though I definitely was on the ground. Like, standing on a pitcher's mound is the best way I can describe it. I remember seeing a man on a bicycle coming from behind me towards the aircraft. I went to yell at him to get him to look up, but it seemed like he was so far away that yelling was pointless, even though it looked to me like he was 10 feet away. When I looked at him, he was in slow motion. He's on a bicycle and I'm standing still, and it took what felt like minutes for him to cover the 30 to 50 yards. He also never seemed to see me or any of the UFOs. Then, off to my left, further up in the sky, a second beige triangle literally appeared out of thin air, blinked all three lights at once, vanished, reappeared, flashed all three lights again, and then just vanished. It didn't fly in and out, it appeared and disappeared. I can't describe to you why or how, but I know that thing flashed its lights at me. I can only describe a feeling of mutual acknowledgement to each other's presence. I know that sounds crazy. After that, I could hear sound again. The colors were back to normal, I was back on the ground, the three balls of light were gone, and the triangle began to slowly rise straight up. It took maybe 5 to 7 minutes to get out of my view. I can remember seeing its light still rotating way up in the sky. The total encounter was 12 minutes. When I turned around, maybe about 200 yards away were two police vehicles, totally tinted windows. They definitely weren't there when I first arrived in the area. I ran the other way. They never got out or chased me or anything. So believe what you want, but I know what the truth is. And I agree with the famous saying, humans are not ready for contact yet. This is much deeper than beings from other planets just visiting Earth.
Okay, let's break this story down. First of all, I just want to address when we get stories and we always, I don't want to say, they do feel maybe a little bit defensive about bringing the story to people. And it just shows that obviously there's a lot of closed-minded people out there. We are not those, and I know our audience is not. So I thank you for trusting us with your story. Another thing that really shook me with this story is you always hear people saying that the lights mesmerized him, and it sounded like that's what happened to him. But I feel like it switched dimensions somehow.
Yes.
Is that what you got?
Yeah, like this feeling that either like switching dimensions or a shield around him almost. He couldn't see because the guy on the bike didn't see him or even seem to notice that he was there. He stopped hearing any kind of sound around him. So it just makes me think of some sort of protective shield that they could have put down around him to maybe keep him still. And with that second craft coming, flashing the lights, almost maybe the first craft was there to keep him in one place. The second craft was there to collect information. I don't know.
Yeah, good point. It's maybe that was a shield to where you're still there, but other people are completely oblivious to it. Mm-hmm. And trying to get the person's attention and realizing that they don't know what's going on. They can't see you. That must be really startling on top of everything else in this story. And when we do get the UFO stories, there's always some sort of like parallel tangent in them of what people experience, but they're also so different in the way that the person describes. To me, it is so thorough. And so you can tell that they still relive that over and over. And that must be really difficult.
Yeah.
Wow. I wish I knew where he was when this happened. I'm always like a fan of knowing, was it in the US? Was it somewhere else? Yeah, maybe he will share that with us, but that was great. That was a really good story and definitely something where it must change your whole perspective. Like you said, we're not ready for it. And I do agree. I don't think us as human beings are ready for it.
Especially, I think as Americans, the last few years, there's been so much unrest and everything. And I just feel
like
if you were to add this to it, oh my God, like, I cannot imagine the mass panic and the theories that would come out of it.
But people want those answers. I think we like to think as individuals we are ready, but are we?
I think as individuals we are. As a big group of people, no. No way.
We can just go on to our next one.
I know you're chomping at the bit.
Oh my God. Like, I've only talked to Jenny about this for ages now. Obviously, we both love all the things in this realm of the things that we get stories in. We have our little tiny loves. And like, Jenny is a huge fan of cryptids and UFOs and those stories. And I like love racking my brain around the unexplained. So we have this amazing story for somebody who heard us mention the 411 episode of Hunted, where the hunters were going missing. And it was like, how did this happen? It doesn't make sense, which we still really want you guys to go watch that show. But this is submitted by somebody that's anonymous in Scotland. And he's talking about experience he had that he feels is very relevant to the show we were talking about. I'm going to start it off and I'm probably going to pause so Jenny and I can talk about it. It is a longer story, so I'll pause. We can have a little chat, but here it goes, you guys. I'm going to try and report this with as little dramatic flair as possible because it seems like people sometimes get carried away with the storytelling when reporting something like this, and I want to avoid that. This happened a long time ago, and not even in America, but for the first time the other day, I was discussing it and suddenly realized that it actually involves three of the major factors associated with lots of missing 411 cases: a body of water, a dog behaving extremely unusually, and a large amount of granite. I was in my mid-teens at the time, and due to unusual circumstances, my dad had woken me in the middle of the night to walk the dog with him and have a chat, which was around 2 a.m. It was a full moon and a very bright night with great visibility. The skies were clear, and we were walking on a granite hill, an extinct volcano, in fact, that has a valley in the middle with a small lake in it. We had walked around the lake before, starting up the side of the valley towards the ridge with the dog on a leash. As we began to approach the top of the slope, the dog stepped dead in its tracks, point blank, refusing to come any further in the direction we were walking. He was literally a dead weight on a leash, and we would have had to move his body and drag it if we wanted to go any further. We realized that he tucked his tail between his legs, was visibly shaken, and was in a curled crouch, making himself as small as possible. He was also entirely fixated on something ahead of us that we hadn't noticed or paid attention to beforehand. It appeared to be a straight black line emerging vertically from the ground. I remember thinking at first that it was a plastic tube they used to protect vulnerable saplings from deer, because in the first moments we became aware of it, there was no discernible feature whatsoever than a black vertical bar. And as we watched, the straight black bar unfurled into a crude shape of a humanoid I estimated to have been around 8 feet tall. Unfurled is the best term I can think of to describe this process. If you've ever seen a butterfly emerge from a chrysalis, it was something like that. The figure was entirely jet black. There were no visible features or contrast within it to any degree, despite the bright moonlight, and black doesn't cover how dark this thing actually was. It was what I imagine a black hole might look like, and although the figure itself wasn't remotely transparent or insubstantial, the outline was slightly fuzzy or blurred, almost like something that's vibrating extremely quickly, or a washing machine on a high spin cycle. It did not have human proportions. It was almost like a child's drawing of a stick man, but with disproportionately long arms and legs. And if you're imagining something like a stick insect made out of material Vansablanc, and in the rough shape of a person, you're really close to that mark. The head was unusually small, and I remember the top of the head being somewhat flat, although my dad doesn't. In every other respect, though, our recollections of the event are identical. This all happened within probably under a minute, and then it turned and faced us. I'm not going to give a melodramatic description, and in fact, words can't really do it justice. Although it lacked any features whatsoever that might be identified as eyes or a face, you could feel this thing's attention on you. And instantly, every hair on my body stood erect, and I broke out in goosebumps. I turned to my dad and said, "Dad, what the fuck is that thing?" He's one of the most skeptical and level-headed people I know, so what really freaked me out was that his answer was just, "I don't know, but we need to get out of here right now." And as a young man, being able to detect genuine fear in my dad's voice was itself quite unsettling. We immediately began to walk sideways away from the figure so as not to entirely turn our backs on it. And the minute we began moving away, it was like a spell was broken on the dog, who began to literally drag us. The figure followed us for more than 5 minutes, maintaining the same distance. It walked with large, slow, deliberate strides, and I remember its arms swung in low arcs as it moved. At no point did it show any signs of aggression. It simply followed, maintaining the same distance from us the entire time. It was perfectly and completely silent. There wasn't a sound when it was following us. We were in a highly adrenalized state during this pursuit, and the atmosphere was extremely tense. We exchanged very few words other than whispers, "Is it still following us?" and "Don't look at it." It never even crossed our minds to run, which in hindsight seems unusual, given that neither of us entertains the possibility that this was just another person out for a walk. In that moment, we both had an almost literally overwhelming sense of rawness about the situation. After about 5 minutes, I stopped. I can't remember exactly what I said, but it was something along the lines of, "This is completely insane. What the fuck is going on? What the fucking thing is this?" And when we stopped, it stopped, and again, just turned to stand facing us straight on. Because of the total lack of features, it might as well have been facing directly away from us, but like I said, there was a very definite physical sense of when this thing's awareness was focused on you. We stood in total silence. The dog continued trying to drag us away. It stood motionless for a minute or two, and then as we watched, it turned, sank down into the solid ground, and disappeared. Immediately, it felt like some sort of change in the air had dissipated, and we began power walking back to the car. When we got back, we were still buzzing with adrenaline and woke everyone up to tell them what we've seen. What do you think so far? Because there's a little bit more to this story, but... what do you think so far, Jenny?
It's so scary to me. There's not a lot of things that I say just are scary. I cannot imagine how I would have reacted in that situation at all. Like, I've told this person, I was like, I don't know how you've continued to live like a normal life. And I say that as in, I told him I would have been obsessed.
Yeah.
Because of the fear that it caused. It's like human nature that we want to know what did this, what was the cause of this, so that I can stop being so afraid if there's something that I can explain.
It's, that is exactly, I think, like a very valid feeling. And another thing that really strikes me with this story is it sounds like nothing else I've ever heard of, ever. And you and I feel like we've heard it all. And then it's happening in these areas where we know that there's a missing cases, like high levels of it. And if this thing can just disappear into the ground, and if this thing can disguise itself as almost, hey, from a distance, it can look like a tree or a branch, you'll never know. I'm really curious with this story, and we have a little bit more that he wrote in, so I want to finish this out for you guys. Maybe we can get some answers with this. But he writes, that's the story. I can't really add anything else that wouldn't just be dramatic flourishes for storytelling purposes. The dog's behavior was extremely uncharacteristic of him, and if we had encountered another person under the same circumstances, there's not a doubt in my mind that he would have been barking and straining on his leash to approach them rather than get away. That's partly why he was on a lead, but also because he was a rescue and very prone to chasing animals. We were both quite shaken as neither of us could really come up with any plausible rational explanation for what we've experienced. And occasionally over the years, people have suggested this was a broken specter, where our own shadows were being cast by the moon on a fog bank or a low cloud, but I can't accept this explanation. There just wasn't any fog or clouds present, and visibility was excellent due to both clear air and the bright moonlight. I have no real theories about what we saw, and nor does my dad. Although I still consider myself to be a naturally skeptical person, this completely shattered my ability to dismiss other people's stories of high strangeness and wild theories, even those that at face value seem absurd. I can hardly laugh in someone's face when they say that they think a Bigfoot is real, but comes from another dimension, for example, or that something otherworldly is taking people in the wilderness. Although obviously I have no reason to believe this was a Bigfoot and the incident did occur in Scotland. Years after the fact and years ago now, I found a thread on a bushcraft forum where people were discussing spooky experiences in the outdoors, and to my amazement, there was a hunter who reported seeing the exact same thing crossing a clearing in the woods from a hunting hide during a full moon in America. I don't have a link because this was a long time ago, but they reported identical details. The small head, the long arms that moved in pendulous arcs while it walked, the slow, deliberate stride, the total blackness and lack of features, and even the fuzzy outline that they described in exactly the same way, as if it was vibrating. Make of this as you will. I'm not trying to convince anyone or anything, and I'm not married to any particular theory about what we saw. I want to briefly touch on two of the more obvious explanations for what we experienced and why I struggled to accept them. So, now for the rational explanations. We were hallucinating. The dog's strange behavior was caused by something unrelated but in an unfamiliar environment. In the dark, we entered some kind of adrenalized state where our minds projected a tangible threat onto an unexpected object. Possibly actually one of those tubes used to protect trees I mentioned earlier. And we both hallucinated the same thing. I find this hard to accept because of the specific details we both recalled afterwards. Two, it was exactly what it appeared to be. A very unusual tall black-skinned individual, emaciated to the verge of death, that was vibrating. And in this scenario, they would have emerged from a hole in the ground, remember the cave, and were shivering from the cold, Scotland. They then followed us in silence before descending back underground via another hole. I can almost accept this and that due to adrenaline, our brains interpreted it as a being more dramatically strange than it actually was. But the problem with this theory is that it would be really, really weird. But it does bring us back into the tangible world of things that actually exist, because although Scotland is something like 98% white, there are still thousands of Scottish people with black skin, and it's possible some of them are very tall. The only thing that's worth adding in this event seemed to flick some switch in my head that made me no longer remotely afraid of the dark under any circumstances. You think it would have gone the other way, and I'm not LARPing as a vampire or some possessed creature of the night, but I worked in a bakery at the time and walked to work along a river in a deep valley in the middle of the night. Sometimes it was pitch black to the extent that you would have to feel your way around with your hands, and I'm not ashamed to admit that sometimes I get a bit spooked, especially when a fox suddenly screamed right next to me. After this event, never again. I can walk through the deepest, darkest forest, abandoned building or mine in complete darkness without feeling the slightest trepidation since this incident, and I don't really know why, but it's the extent that people have commented on it. I don't know how you can do that. And now not being afraid of the dark is hardly a superpower, but for me, it always seemed being a markedly less intimidating experience after this encounter, and I really can't rationalize why, because it seems like it would make so much more sense for it to have instilled fear in me. That's all I have to say. In the unlikely event that you've seen just the same thing, please do let me know. If anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer these.
It is really interesting what he said there towards the end, that he, instead of it instilling more fear into him, he's got less fear. Now, maybe that's just because he's, fuck, I've already dealt with this. What more could there be? You know what I mean?
I do. And be honest of the whole story, because obviously I've never experienced what he has, but that part itself really resonated with me. Growing up a kid that had a lot of trauma from the past and being in a lot of fearful situations, I feel like it's the same for me. It's, you feel like I've been there, done that. I've encountered it all. And even when, you know, we'd go on ghost hunts in the UK and they'd be like, can you be alone in this room in the pitch black? And the rest of the group is going to fuck off down here. And I'd be like, okay. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know where it comes from, but I can understand that feeling of like, why am I now just not bothered at all?
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
I think maybe that has something to do with it, just subconsciously for him. And I agree that I don't think either of those quote unquote logical explanations could actually be the explanation. I just don't. I think the first one about how does two people hallucinate the exact same thing? Like similar things I could see, but the exact same thing. And then it, to me, that also wouldn't explain necessarily the dog's behavior either.
The dog's behavior being very off. Yeah.
I don't necessarily believe that they would remember everything that they're recalling from this had there been some sort of chemical reaction from them and that being the reason that they saw it. The second part is that just it's a very tall, emaciated, dark-skinned person. That's just, I feel like, which sounds, it's going to sound ridiculous coming from something where we talk about everything unexplained, but I feel like that would be a theory that's just really reaching for somebody who wants to be like, oh, there's a perfectly good explanation. Like, that's a lot of detail. You're just assuming in an area, like he said, Scotland is like 98% light-skinned white people. Like, okay, so you're assuming that there's one really dark-skinned person that's for some reason living in a cave. They're very emaciated. They're very tall. They're apparently not speaking, and they're like approaching you in such a strange manner.
Yeah.
Like, there's too many loose ends in that. Like, there they don't make, it doesn't make any sense. Like, honestly, an unexplained phenomenon, something like the missing 411, something undiscovered somehow makes a lot more sense than saying in an area like Scotland, you've got a very tall, very emaciated, long-limbed, mute, dark person. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. And when he did mention that, he's done this research trying to just understandably get some sort of explanation or somebody who's experienced the same thing. And he said there was a guy in the States who had the exact same experience in a hunted location, like in a place where people go hunt. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, yeah, that it makes, if you watch these shows, like I said, The Hunted 411 that I was obsessed with, it doesn't make sense to people who go missing. Like, you got to think about it. It's no footprints, no sign of trauma, no sign of them at all. It's like the person vanishes.
And a lot of times it's like the person got naked, folded their clothing, left all of their survival gear behind, never used any of it, and just walked off the face of the earth. It doesn't make sense. They're experienced lifelong hunters leaving their weapons behind when anybody, I've never hunted myself. And even I know that there are certain things you do if you're a hunter that's split off and you can't find your way back. You have those guns not just to hunt, but also to signal your location and to give notice, hey, shot, I'm lost. You know what I mean? So these are not people who had no idea what they were doing. And it's not like their car broke down and they weren't prepared and they just walked off into the woods. It's not like that. These are the situations where these are people who do this for profit or for their own survival, people who live off the land, people who just naturally are game hunters and they feed their families with it, or that's their time with their buddies or whatever. And it just makes no sense the way that things are being found. if they're found at all.
Yeah, exactly. And explains that these often happen in these pockets where it's like there's one person and then within a couple miles, it's another person. Then a few years later, it's all in like these vicinities. And it's if it is something like this, A, then they're lucky to get away from whatever this was. But also it serves as some explanation, but I don't know. And this is another one where I really want our listeners to come back and be like, dude, yes, I know I've seen this, or I know about this, or here's what I think it is. You could have a completely different theory, but I'm so lost on this one and so fascinated.
I do have to ask you this. What do you think about the fact that it followed them, but it didn't chase them? Because that got my attention a lot. What do you think?
I feel if it was one person only, there'd be a different outcome to the story. And we wouldn't know. So I feel like when you take two, I'm going to assume they're both guys, maybe two larger individuals plus an animal. I'm going to assume that it was maybe an intimidation factor to just follow them, or maybe observation. But I feel like if it was just one person solo,
it would have been different.
We would have a missing person case.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to scare the guy.
You saying that, it also made me think maybe it was trying to just keep them out of a certain area.
Oh, yeah.
That just hit me. Maybe the fact that it was slowly just almost pushing them back by slowly following them, and it didn't attack. So it reminds me of, I recently saw a video where this guy was on a hike in California and he accidentally came across where these mountain lion cubs were. And of course, there comes mama right around the corner and follows him. So he's walking backwards now and just follows him and does a couple of little warning jumps towards him for about 5 minutes or so. And then as soon as he's out of a certain range, she leaves and goes back to her cubs. So that just made me think maybe a similar thing where it's, I don't want to hurt you unless I have to, but you cannot come to where this specific thing is, whatever it may be. Yeah. I don't want you here.
A really good point, and one I didn't think of, so I'm glad you brought that up. Like, very good point, and that could be the case. And also, in the case of the guy at the mountain lion, he's fucking lucky, man. You know?
The entire time, this guy was like, he's got his video camera rolling because he was going on this hike in this beautiful area. He's got his, I don't know if it was a GoPro or his phone. I think it was his phone, but he's, oh God, oh fuck, leave me alone. I'm big and scary. Like, he's trying to, like, make himself, and he was smart that he didn't turn around and run, because then you turn into prey.
Yeah, and that's our instinct as humans, isn't it?
All right, so we've got one more. This one's kind of a listener question. Maybe somebody has encountered something similar. So this is from listener Zachary. So Zachary says, I was living in my dad's old apartment with my sister, and she and I were upstairs. I had to go downstairs to my dad's bedroom for something I can't remember, not really relevant though. When I got to the bedroom door, I felt a really weird presence that something was on the other side of the door. I thought it was just my brain giving me the creeps, so I cracked the door open. Across the room, this white hooded figure started charging towards me and around my dad's bed at full speed. It had two black holes for eyes and no other features that I remember. I slammed the door shut and ran away. I never heard it bang on the door or make another sound other than its stomping. This thing scarred me for a while. I still have a great fear of the dark, where I have to have two bright nightlights in my bedroom to sleep, and I don't like being home alone or on a single level alone. I still have trouble pondering what it could have been. Was it my imagination? Maybe a family ghost? Maybe something evil or otherworldly? I don't know. Has anybody else seen a white hooded figure with black holes for eyes in their home? It wasn't my dad pranking me, he was at work. And no, none of us have ever practiced any form of magic to summon anything. And yes, I know it sounds like a KKK member, but the only logical explanation I'd have for that is if we had an ancestor in the KKK. My family is from the American South, East Coast, so while I'm ashamed, if that's the case, I don't see it as impossible. It's also important to note that I've never, ever seen this thing again in my life. Was it only a hallucination?
No, I personally don't think so. I personally think when we hear about people's otherworldly encounters, they always come in just random shapes, forms. So maybe it is something tied to that area, but it sounds really, especially running full force around a bed, that's enough for me to be like, we're moving.
That's like super like, aggressive.
Very aggressive. And something, maybe he had like glimpse into another dimension or something. But yeah, that one's really scary. And I do want to hear what our listeners have to say if they've ever seen anything like that, or if they have their own theory on what that could be, whether a ghost or not. Just let us know.
Yeah, I'd definitely love to hear it. And I'm curious too. I would suck though to find out that you did have a family member that was in the KKK.
That'd be more terrifying than a ghost.
No shit. That's the worst.
I think we had a really good episode this week.
Yeah. Where
not only a UFO story that was really fascinating and something I think you and I both could ponder on for a long time, but this 411 story that I just want to like look into it now and find out like what is it. So thank you for these stories, and thank you for taking the time out of your day to listen to us and to share us with your family, your friends, just tell people. And definitely feel free to reach out to us, whether on Facebook, Instagram, or you can email us at tftcsub@gmail.com. That stands for talesfromthecreepsub@gmail.com.
Yes, we would love to hear all of your stories, your questions, your thoughts, your theories. One thing I really love is that this is probably one of the only types of podcasts where we want everything to leave you with more questions than answers.
Yeah, we definitely don't have all the answers. And I think it's great when people reach out with questions and their own theories. It's like there's room enough for all of us to put our two cents in, I think.
For sure.
So, yeah.
So we hope to hear from y'all very soon. And we will see y'all again next week.
Yes, thank you so much, you guys.
Bye.
Bye.